present. The first item of business before us today is HJR 56, 1984 Yukon Quest Sled Dog Race. Mike Davis, would you identify yourself and speak to the resolution, please?
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm going to be very brief today, and I think the resolution pretty much speaks to how I feel about it, and also the other members of the House from the Interior. I just wanted to just go over the route of the race and kind of trace it for you, if I may, Madam Chair. It starts off in Fairbanks, and for those of you that went to the Western State Conference, it goes out to the Chena Hot Springs Road, almost to the Hot Springs, and then it cuts from the Hot Springs, cuts up into the Circle Mining District. It'll go up to Steese Highway, approximately around Montana Creek Camp, and then it'll follow the Steese Highway up to the town of Circle, follow the Yukon River up to Dawson, and then at Dawson, then it takes off onto the mining trails through this country, and winds up in Whitehorse. It'll start later on this month. It's the first year of this race. There's 27 people that have signed up. They put all their money together for it. In fact, they were going to try to do the organization this year, and it turns out they had so much widespread support from Fairbanks that they decided to go for it and have the race this year. Next year, the race will be from Whitehorse. They've got Canadian women entered in the race. That's the first time they've ever had a Canadian woman in any long-distance race in Alaska. There's a couple neighbors of mine that are, two women neighbors of mine that are competing against each other in this race. There's just a lot of enthusiasm in the Fairbanks area, and I urge your support tonight. And I'm certainly glad to answer any questions. I happen to spend a little time behind a dog sled myself, so I guess I have a special interest in this piece of legislation here.
Representative Bob Davis, for the record, would you please tell us the mileage of this race?
It's approximately 1,000 miles.
I'd say quite an endurance test, huh? Are there questions on behalf of any member of the committee? We commend you for speedy action on the House side on this, and we will try to reciprocate on this side. Representative Davis, thank you very much. Is there anyone else who wanted to be heard on this resolution? The chair would accept a motion on the resolution.
Move the HJR 56 with individual recommendations.
Is there objection? So be it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Today we have with us James Jenks, who's here from the Resource Development Council. We welcome him here. And it's my understanding that James will be introducing our guest from Oregon. Would you proceed, please?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is James Jenks. I am the Deputy Director of the Resource Development Council. Some months ago, we became aware of a county commissioner for Curry County in the state of Oregon who had expressed some concerns over land management and land planning problems that had surfaced over the past decade in Oregon. The commissioner's name is Kelly Ross. We followed through on asking more about what his concerns were. We found several articles that had been published concerning some of those land management problems, and we asked Kelly if he would come up to address this group and speak to some of the problems that appear to be similar to the problems Alaska is currently facing with land planning and land management. I'd like to introduce to you Kelly Ross, who is a county commissioner for Curry County and the state of Oregon.
Mr. Jenks, if you'd like to stay there with him, you're perfectly welcome to him. Pull up another chair if you like, Mr. Ross, and welcome aboard.
Madam Chairman and the members of the committee, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to you today. I want to emphasize from the beginning that I know very little about Alaska, and I'm certainly not here to tell you how to run your affairs. I know there's enough people that are trying to do that anyway. But I do know about comprehensive land planning, as Jim said. For the last decade, we in Oregon have been working and struggling with one of the most comprehensive and stringent land use planning programs in the nation. It was conceived by Governor McCall in 1973, shortly after he made his, what we consider in Oregon, his infamous statement about come visit but please don't stay. And it was intended to protect the resources of Oregon, notably our timber resources, agricultural resources, basically the same type of program and resources that are being attempted to be protected in the state of Alaska. The intent in 1973 was to provide security, certainty, and direction for the future. But during these 10 years that it's been in place, many in the state have begun to question those goals and have come to the conclusion that it's instead caused uncertainty, chaos, and stagnation. It's important to emphasize the differences that our planning program has with the Bristol Bay Cooperative Management Program that I've reviewed. Oregon's system is concerned only with private property, while the Bristol Bay Plan deals only with publicly owned property. But after thoroughly reviewing the Bristol Bay Plan, I have come to the conclusion that there are some very significant characteristics that it shares with the Oregon system. I was very interested to read in the Bristol Bay Plan that the area there involved is the most productive salmon fishery in the world. And so I found it very logical and appropriate that the fishery take a high priority in land planning there. But I want to caution that the same mistakes that we made in Oregon should not be repeated in Bristol Bay. Like the Bristol Bay Plan, Oregon devoted hundreds of pages to every conceivable action of man that could have a detrimental effect on the fishery. And then along came Mother Nature in the form of the El Nino current and completely devastated the Oregon fishery and to a certain extent the Washington fishery, and has had widespread effects in the state of Oregon with numerous commercial fishermen going out of business and as a result defaulting on loans to banks, and actually several banks have gone out of business in the state. Our governor recently declared an economic disaster area for the Small Business Administration. So all the land use planning documents we found in Oregon aren't going to stop a natural disaster, and therefore it's something that should be considered and flexibility included within the plan in the event that such a disaster occurs, and there should be flexibility built in to accommodate such a disaster and to plan for certain contingencies. After reviewing the Bristol Bay Plan, I can say that I don't believe that it has that flexibility. I think that the plan locks that area into just one option and doesn't allow for any other type of options to be considered in the event that something does happen to the fishery. While minerals and gas and oil leasing share a primary use designation with fish and wildlife in some areas, the language of the plan places an almost impossible burden of proof on anyone desiring to develop those uses. We found in Oregon that it's ultimately the courts that shape a land use planning program. Shortly after the bill was passed in Oregon to create our program, a private interest group calling itself Thousand Friends of Oregon organized and started challenging and taking into court the local groups and decisions of the land use boards. And that was where the policies affecting land use in Oregon were developed. And mainly, they have been against any kind of development or use of the resources because the language used in the original bill and in the original plans were skewed towards that end. We see in the Bristol Bay Plan the same type of language that's in the Oregon regulations. Using this language, it takes very little effort to show that a certain requirement or criteria wasn't met, but to defend against that, it takes thousands of dollars and thousands of hours of research to show that the criteria has been met. It has reached such a point in Oregon that the governor in 1982 created a special task force to study the entire program and take testimony around the state, and I think certain excerpts from that are very appropriate. A report prepared for the task force by a land use study group said, I quote, "It is a complex system of legal rules and procedures, a system with a face that only a lawyer could love." And then a former vice chairman of the state agency said that the path of one decision may take years to complete. Only the rich, the extremely tenacious, or those paid annual salaries to advocate can afford to persevere in such a system. The court and the lawyers have lost the program in the procedural woods. So I would certainly caution that if the intent is for a balanced approach to the resource, balanced in the terms of development as well as conservation, that intent should be spelled out very clearly, that it shouldn't be assumed that intent is known, because it's the courts looking at what has been generated in writing that will interpret that intent. In Oregon, we found that, as I said before, the primary goal was to protect our timber and agricultural resource, but when no one wanted to build houses during our recession, we were left at a loss, and there was a mad scramble to find other sources of employment for the people, but the land use planning regulation served as an almost impenetrable barrier for new business locating in the state. A study by the Stanford Research Institute found that it took 5 times as long to locate a business in Portland, Oregon than it did across the Columbia River in Vancouver, Washington, and 15 times as long to locate a business in Portland than in Austin, Texas. So as a result, many businesses didn't even look at Oregon and went elsewhere. And some more revealing statistics in National Industrialist magazine kind of keeps a scorecard on how many businesses states have attracted. In the first half of 1981, they found that North Carolina had attracted 179, Texas 303, Florida 191, and Oregon 4. So we're suffering now under the effects of this land use program that should have been foreseen in 1973 when they were conceived, and a little more balance and flexibility built into the plan. In talking with some of the people while I've been here in Alaska, I find that one of the reasons for adopting a plan such as the Bristol Bay Plan is the feeling that it will give local control to that area. And in Oregon, we've heard the same kind of story when we developed our plans, but have found in the decade that has passed that if anything, it has vastly diminished local control over the entire land use planning process for several reasons. The first is that you have a very complex document that was produced by biologists, geologists, all sorts of experts, and it is very hard for the average layman in the local area to understand that. So as a result, they defer to the judgment and expertise of others living outside the area, and oftentimes pass the authority for those judgments to outside the area. In another sense, we found that myself as a locally elected official, while I've been in office for the last 3 years, I would say 80% of the local land use decisions that we've made have been overturned, either through the courts by special interest groups appealing them, or by the state agencies involved, because again, the complexity of the document and the requirements and the findings required to justify any decisions, you almost have to be a land use expert to do that, and the average locally elected official simply doesn't have the time to devote to develop that expertise. If the myth of local control was shattered at all, it was shattered in 1982 in Oregon when there was an initiative on the ballot in the general election to do away with the entire program. And at the vote, the initiative was unsuccessful, but it passed in 21 of Oregon's 36 counties and was defeated only as a result of a heavy vote in the urban area around Portland. But the outlying rural areas, which are very similar, I think, in many respects to the Bristol Bay region, found that they no longer had local control for their property passed to others. In conclusion, I think that it's recognized that a good comprehensive land use plan is one that realistically works to ensure stability in the future. And with the flexibility to adapt to whatever the future brings. I don't feel, in my review of the Bristol Bay Plan, that it has that flexibility. Now, I realize that the legislature at this stage doesn't really have an active role in that Bristol Bay Plan, but as one elected official to another, I know that isn't always mean a lot, that when you're an elected official, you take the blame whether you've had an active role in it or not, and I think that good that you know what to expect in the future and some of the consequences that can arise from adoption of such a plan. So I'd be happy to answer any questions or provide any further information.
Mr. Ross, I don't know if you know that we have had a briefing on the plan, and we plan on having further hearings on the Bissell Bay plan. There are some areas that we are very concerned about. I wonder if you have any specifics as to the type of language that you feel is really restrictive and would not allow for adjustment of disaster or whatever in the future, or if you could supply us with some of that, because it'd be very helpful to us.
I can do that. briefly, the thing that struck me immediately when I read through the plan is that in all the alternatives that were presented, the fish and wildlife was the primary use for the entire area. And when you look at the definition for primary use, it says that where a management unit has two or more primary uses that could conflict, the guidelines of the plan or existing regulations or procedures will direct how those conflicting primary uses are to be managed. And then looking at the guidelines, I find that the criteria you have to satisfy are so restrictive on for any conflicting primary use that it's almost out of the question that any use with outside of fish and wildlife would be pursued. Now, I don't know, perhaps that is the intent of Alaska, but I think that you should be aware of the consequences of that.
Madam Chair, a follow-up on this one.
Senator Fisher.
Did you look at the economic value of the fisheries that's involved as against all other uses in the area? I think you would find that the fishery is so significant, overwhelmingly significant, that that may well have been why the plan gave that special treatment.
Right. I understand that. But I think, as was spelled out in the plan, that there really is no information available on what the mineral resources of that area is. And as I said before, we have found in Oregon how fragile that fishery resource is. So that there should be flexibility and you shouldn't close your options on those, that type of thing.
As I understand the plan, Senator Fisher, there are, if you remember the maps that we had, there are certain areas that are not related to the fisheries. And I don't know, in any management plan of that nature that's been negotiated, as long and hard as that one has, and with, it's my understanding, the governor is very close to ready to sign that. It's to come before the council, I believe, at their next meeting, or may have been postponed to the next one. But I do think it bears us looking into to make sure that we haven't foreclosed all of our options.
Of course, hindsight is always the best side, and we in Oregon now are regretting that we didn't build into our plan some aggressive measures for enhancement of that fishery resource, that we didn't take it for granted that it would always be there. And in reading through the Bristol Bay plan, I only see, I think, two paragraphs that talk about enhancement of the fishery. And it would seem wise, certainly in light of our experience, to take aggressive measures to enhance the fishery to ensure that they are protected against natural depletion.
I was wondering what mechanism or device you have for bringing those options back for consideration again after you once have adopted the plan.
It's a very complicated process and easily manipulated by politics. It has to go through the legislature. And we found in each legislature that because most of our legislators are from the urban areas of the state and are not really acquainted with the problems of the coastal area with the fisheries, that they are unwilling to change what has been put into the law and allow for further options, that sort of thing.
But if you build those flexibilities into the plan, you really don't have a plan then. Is that what you're saying?
No, I think that...
Can you build those in and make them more... to leave our options open and still have a plan that's really pretty firmly in place?
I think so. I think that... first of all, you need to have all the available information available to you, which the Bristol Bay plan admits that it doesn't have any information on mineral resources of the area. And so in the event that something happened to the fisheries, either a private mining firm or the state would have to go in and develop that type of information to develop that resource. Also, we have found that where you have a plan that in our state, and I believe that this one is a similar case, where it conflicts with existing regulations, it also closes off some of that flexibility. You should strive as much as possible to bring this into consistency with any existing state and federal regulations so that the process can be streamlined and it won't, you know, hit bumps in the road and be held up at any phase, so that there has to be arbitration and mediation between mediate out the inconsistencies.
Madam Chair, I'm interested, Mr. Ross, in Oregon. I'm somewhat familiar with your economy there. What happens, you talked about no business coming in, and you're very dependent, obviously, on extractive industries and so on. What kind of things were turned down, and why were they? I mean, who was seeking to come in that couldn't?
Well, Mr. Jinks showed me an article that made the Anchorage Daily News middle of January about a new mining venture that had made a commitment to the state.
In your state?
Right, in Oregon, but was held up because of the land use laws. One county where the mining venture wanted to locate had come into conflict with the state land use planning agency, and as a result, the state agency had placed a moratorium on the county for any new building permits so that the mining venture was stopped. And similar things have happened all around the state, and it just takes so long to get anything, to clear all the necessary hurdles to get something located there that most people don't even want to attempt to deal with it.
Are there further questions or comments? Mr. Ross, we truly appreciate your bringing to us the problems that are being faced by Oregon, and we appreciate your concern as well, Mr. Jenks. Are you having this year in your in Anchorage again your same resources?
Yes, next Wednesday and Thursday we're having
our committee. That was my way of bringing up the fact that many members of our committee will be there. And on our trip to the Pacific Rim and encouragement of development, friendships, and trade, we have other guests I know that are coming. Do you have specific plans for any of those groups to meet with legislative bodies or any of that stuff while we're...
When I left on Monday afternoon, they're trying to schedule some meetings and arrange for them. I don't know what they've arrived at because I haven't talked yet. Certainly, we will have that opportunity.
That's very good. Senator McKay, we're just about to wind up here.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
I know that you had other commitments.
You're talking about your town, too.
Yeah. Well, they were making some comparisons between the Bristol Bay plan and the Oregon plan, and some pitfalls as they saw it, to advise us to take a good look. We will be, as a committee, I think I told you previously, we will be hearing from both federal people, state people, and local people as far as that plan is concerned in due time to give some recommendation or not give recommendation, as this committee wishes to do, to the council before any agreements are made. Is there anything else come before the committee? Are there any of you who did not let us know that they were planning on attending?
No, separate.
Well, then I'll finish it. Are there any of you who did not let us know that you wish to attend? The resources are available for attending. If you are, please let us know, because space on planes is very tough to acquire. Senator Fisher.
Madam Chair, I just want to report that we've been working with the Department of Fish and Game and with the SeaWorld people on the issue of the resolution dealing with orcas. And a meeting was held at ADF&G today, where sort of the whole thing is coming together, at least on the Senate side. And we hope to have a proposed committee substitute before you on Friday. Staff has been informed.
Okay, I'll look at it before Friday and make that decision. Anything else to come before us? Then thank you again very much. Committee's adjourned.